Just to review what we went through, last week we talked about when the Old Testament lambs were slain, and the reason we discuss this is because there is some controversy about when this all took place, and because of the way things are done today in the Jewish community, then a lot of people feel that the lambs were slain in the afternoon, which they were in Christ's time, and then he was that lamb, and then they celebrated the Passover meal on the 15th day of Nisan. And so we would look at things differently. For instance, we saw that Israel slew the lambs at the beginning of the 14th. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 6, it talks about at twilight. Another way that you could translate that is between the two evenings. One of the questions we looked at was, what does that mean? Between the two evenings. You know, is that between what time and what other time? You know, some say it's between noon and sunset. Other people say it's between the beginning of the day, one sunset, and the next sunset. So what is it? And we looked at a principle that you find in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 32. When does the Sabbath begin? It begins at even. That is, at sunset. And it runs until sunset on the first day of the week. And the word that is used for that is ba'arev, which means at evening or at sunset. And then we went to Exodus chapter 16, and we looked at the use of ba'arev there, or at evening. And what it tells us is that at the end of the Sabbath, it's talking about this the quail that was given to Israel, because they were complaining that God was going to let them starve in the wilderness. And what we learn is that at the end of the Sabbath, at sunset, at Bar Arev, the quail were sent to them, and they could get the quail, and then they could slaughter the quail, and then they were to eat it between the two evenings. Between the two evenings began at sunset and ran from that time until darkness. All right? So between the two evenings means from sunset until complete darkness. And as we all know, as you look on a calendar, you'll see it says sunset. But sunset sometimes is pretty bright. You know, the sun's out and you can still see pretty well, but the sun has set. There's still some effect of the sun still. And then as the sun goes down and goes further over the horizon, then it gets darker until you reach full darkness. So when the lambs were slain was at the beginning of the 14th, not the end of the 14th. And then they were to slaughter them and eat them between sunset and full darkness. So we looked at that particular situation last week and saw why the lambs were slain at that particular time. And that is a reason why Christ continued to eat the Passover when he did, is because it was at the beginning of the 14th. And he did what he did for a reason. Not just because he was going to die the next afternoon. He did that because that's when the lambs had always been slain in Israel. So, we looked at that, and we looked at, and there are a number of things that, of course, go along with this, and we're going to look at some of those things today. So, immediately after the 14th began at sunset, the Passover lambs were slain. And the lambs were then roasted by fire on that same night and then eaten with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. And it would have been close to midnight by the time they actually finished their meal. At midnight, the death angel passed over the houses of Israel and killed the firstborn of Egypt. And then the children of Israel then remained in their houses for the rest of that night, as they were told to do in Exodus chapter 12, verse 10. And that verse tells us that they stayed inside. They did not go out until the next morning. This Exodus 12:10 tells us that whatever remained of the Passover meal and the lamb was to be burned. It was to be burned up, and that, you know, would take some time. There would be some time involved in that. The insinuation was that they remained in their homes for the rest of the night and took care of the things as God commanded them. The next verse we'll look at clearly commands them to remain in their houses all that night, and some people think that they ate the lamb and then they rushed out of Egypt. that same night, everything taking place that night, the night of the 15th. That's what's felt in the Jewish community. But we'll see here that they killed the lamb at the beginning of the 14th, and then they remained in their houses and did all of the things that God commanded them to do. Let's go look at Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12 and a couple of verses here. Exodus chapter 12, verse 22. Exodus 12, verse 22. It says, "And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the door, two doorposts with blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and allow the destroyer to not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you." So none were to go out, and the reason was the destroyer was going to come through the land, and unless you were in the house and the blood had been put on your doorposts and lintels, then you were going to be affected by the destroyer. But as long as you were under the blood of the lamb, you were fine. So what event does the Passover commemorate? What event does the Passover commemorate? It is said in the Jewish community that it commemorates the exodus out of Egypt. Is that what the Passover represents? It doesn't. It represents God passing over Israel. It represents God passing over Israel because of the blood. It doesn't represent coming out of Egypt. Another holy day represents that. Let's go verses 24 through 27. Go down there. It says, "And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. It will come to pass that when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised that you should keep this service, and it shall be when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' that you shall say," this is speaking of the Passover, "'It is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households.'" So it's talking about the passing over. That's what the Passover represents, the passing over of Israel as a result of putting the blood on the lintels and the doorposts. And it reminds us of God passing over our sins as well. Since the Passover commemorates that event, then that event happened on the day that it commemorates it. What that means is, why would you have the Passover sacrifice and then eat it on the next day, the beginning of the next day? You know, it would make sense that you would make the sacrifice and everything would be done on the same day. And that's what they did. They did not, the Passover was not on the 15th. Did the children of Israel remain in their houses all night? Did they remain all night and not go out until the next morning, as instructed in Exodus 12, verse 32? Let's look at verse 28. Verse 28 says, "Then the children of Israel went away and did so." They did exactly what God told Moses to command them. They stayed in their houses as they were instructed. They were told to stay in until the morning, and that's what they did. So when you combine Exodus chapter 12, verse 10, verse 22, and verse 28, it gives us a clear picture. The Israelites remained in their houses the entire night of the 14th. And what happened after that? Well, we're going to discuss two overall periods of time, the nighttime portion of the Passover, and we'll cover the daytime portion of the Passover, what took place during those periods of time, during Israel's first Passover. So we've already answered one of the questions. When did they sacrifice the lambs? It was at the beginning of the 14th, between sunset and total darkness. Now, where were the Passover lambs killed? Where were the Passover lambs killed? Let's go to verses 3 and 4 of Exodus chapter 12. It says here, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel," and they're told here that on the 10th day of the first month, every man was to select a lamb. So they selected a lamb And they could, if their household was large, they could have somebody else share the lamb with them. They didn't, so they could share the lamb, and two families might get together, or several families might get together in one household. Then they're told to, let's go to verse 7. Exodus chapter 12, verse 7. And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the doorpost and the lintels. And so if you were eating this meal and going through this process with somebody else, all the families that were in that household would come under that blood. You didn't have to have it on your house if you were sharing this with somebody else. So these verses, Exodus 6, 12, verse 6 and 7, tell us that the Passover consisted not only of slaying the lamb, but also of eating the lamb. It was all part of the ceremony that was important for them to do. They were to kill the lamb, and they were to eat the lamb. And so you couldn't kill the lamb on the 14th and then eat it on the 15th and still be observing the Passover. So where were the lambs killed? They were killed in the homes where they were observing the Passover. So where were the children of Israel during the entire night? Second question, where were they? Were the children during the entire night? As we saw, they were in their houses, and they remained in their houses the entire night. They didn't go out until morning. Now we make note of that in verse 22, where it says, "And you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood, and then you would put it on the doorpost, and you had the death angel come through at midnight and pass through the land." And as we saw here, they stayed in their houses as they had been commanded. So where were their houses? Where did the children of Israel live? Let's go to Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8. So this is in the midst of the plagues. The plagues have already begun to be poured out on the land of Egypt. And we learn here where Israel made their home during this time. Verse 20. And the Lord said to Moses, "Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. Then say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants, on your people, and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. And in that day I will set apart the land of Goshen.'" So he's going to make a distinction between the Egyptians and the Israelites. The Israelites lived in a particular part of Egypt known as Goshen. And he's going to make a distinction between where the Egyptians live and where the Israelites live. So he's going to set apart the land of Goshen in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord in the land. So anyway, he is going to send this swarm of flies, but he's not going to affect the people of Israel who live in the land of Goshen. So their houses were in that portion of Egypt called the land of Goshen. And in the handout, I gave you a map so you kind of see where the land of Goshen is and have an idea where that is in conjunction with the other things that are going to take place here. That portion of Egypt had actually been given to Joseph back in about 200 years earlier, and you can read about that in Genesis chapter 47. It was a very fertile area, about 300 square miles, an area about 15 miles by 20 miles, generally a rectangle. The city of Ramses was built, which is, you can make note of that. Ramses was in the land of Goshen, down toward almost in the middle of the land, a little bit to the east there. But then it was on the border, basically, of the land of Goshen. And it was built by the people of Israel. As we'll see, there's no indication that the children of Israel left their homes in the middle of the Passover night and journeyed to Ramses. And Ramses, as we'll see, is important. I point that out because Exodus 12, verse 37, tells us that Israel began leaving Egypt from Ramses, not from Goshen. Let's just make note of that in verse 37. Chapter 12, verse 37. It tells us here that then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses. That's where they began their journey to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. So they didn't begin in Goshen, they began from Ramses. That was their rendezvous point. And we'll get look at that a little more closely here as we go along. So somehow these people had to get from wherever they lived in the land of Goshen to the city of Ramses, and then that was their rendezvous point, and from there they began their journey out of Egypt. But where were the children of Israel on the night of the 14th? They remained in their homes the entire night in the land of Goshen, not in Ramses. So they remained there all night long. So as you think about this, and you think about what's unfolding here, they had to make the sacrifice of the lamb. But then comes the question, how long did it take to kill, roast, eat the lambs, and burn their bones and remains? How long did that take? Let's think about that for a few minutes. It's an important question, because as we look at this, it will show us that there was not sufficient time for Israel to do all of that and then also leave the land of Egypt on the same night as those people who propose a Passover on the 15th tell us. It couldn't be done in one night. As it says in Exodus chapter 12, verses 6 to 10, it talks about sacrificing the lambs. They were to have a lamb. That lamb was to be about a year old. And a year-old lamb would weigh between 20 and 30 pounds, a small animal. But you know, from if you've ever had a 20 or 30-pound turkey, that takes you a while to roast that, doesn't it? And that was the case with them as well. So in the springtime in Jerusalem, the 14th of the first month would begin around 6 p.m. And if you think about the killing of the lamb and everything, it would probably take 10 to 15 minutes to kill and bleed a 20 to 30-pound lamb. Now, all of you pros who kill animals and bleed them and all of that, you may question that, but we're looking at general time frames here. I've never done this. I'm just estimating this. So 10 to 15 minutes to kill and to bleed a 20 to 30-pound lamb. Then it's going to take you probably another 10 to 15 minutes to skin the lamb. If it was me, it would take longer, but anyway, I'd probably have to go get a Band-Aid and all that kind of stuff because I cut myself in the process. But anyway, it would take longer for me. But for somebody who is used to this, slaughtering their own animals, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. The lamb would then be put on a skewer for a spit or into an oven for roasting. And it was to be roasted whole with its head and legs still intact. And not a single bone of that lamb was to be broken, because it portrayed Christ. His legs weren't broken. The preparation for roasting, assuming the fire had already been prepared, would probably take 10 to 15 minutes. So the process from killing of the lamb, would probably run about 45 minutes to an hour. And so you have twilight at sunset, so you're already in past sunset an hour when all of this is unfolding. And then you have to roast the lamb. How long is that going to take? So if it's 6 p.m. when it's sunset, it's going to be 7 by the time you've got everything going as far as the preparation. It's going to cook for 4 or 5 hours, so you're going to be somewhere around 11 or 12 by the time it's done. So so it's going to be very close to midnight by the time they were eating the lamb. And based on this timing, they were probably eating the lamb at midnight, and that's when the death angel came through. So would you be eating your food in haste, with a feeling of a certain amount of trepidation as you're eating this, knowing that you're eating and the death angel is passing through the land? And you had Egyptians that probably lived in the land of Goshen as well. And those people are probably losing their firstborn. As the death angel passes through, you would hear what's taking place. And you would know that something really serious is going on. They probably heard the cries of the Egyptians around them. And it tells us that there was not one household in Egypt that where there was not one dead. So what did they do after finishing the Passover meal a little bit after after midnight? Chapter 12, verse 10 tells us that says, "Do not eat it raw nor boiled at all with water, but roasted with fire, the head with its legs and its entrails. You shall not let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire." So all the remains of the slaughtered lamb were to be burned up by morning. And now to completely burn the skin, the fat, the fleece, and bone would have taken 2 to 3 hours. You know, it takes a while to burn a body up completely. None of it is to remain. So it would have had to be close to 3 a.m. before all the requirements given in Exodus chapter 12 could have been accomplished. And if sunrise was about 6 a.m., that's a mere 3 hours away. So the first light of day would have been around maybe 5 a.m. The sun has not risen yet, but before the sun rises, you have some light. So we know that they left Egypt from Ramses, and we know they left by night. And the night's almost over here. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1 tells us that they left by night. Plus, they were told to not go out of their residences until morning. So when you think about all that was required, and you put it all together, you find that there was no way that they would have had time to do all of this and journey to Goshen and get everything organized and walk out all in one night. Couldn't be done. Couldn't do it. Impossible. So to get to Ramses, it would be a trip by foot of somewhere between 1 to 15 miles, depending on where you lived in the land of Goshen. You know, most of us can't walk 15 miles in an hour. Maybe you can. Maybe you can run 15 miles in an hour, but most of us can't. So if you're hoofing it over to the rendezvous point and you're 15 miles out, it's going to take you a while to walk over there. So all of this took time, and it tells us that it couldn't have happened in one night. And what we know is that it took place over a night and a day, and the journey actually began the second night. So when did the children of Israel leave their houses? Another question here. When did the children of Israel leave their houses? That may seem like a redundant question, but there's a reason why we have to ask it. Because those who claim all this happened on the night of the 15th say morning can be any time after midnight. So they say they could have left right after midnight. They could leave any time after the death angel passed through. But as we've already looked at, it was going to take them more time to get everything done. They couldn't have left just after midnight. The biblical command is clear. Exodus chapter 12, verse 22 states that none of you shall go out of his house until morning. And as we've also looked at, Moses gave them commandment, and we're told in Exodus 12, verse 28, that they did everything that Moses commanded. Everything that Moses commanded. So the question then becomes, when was morning? When was morning? Can morning be any time after midnight? Or is morning when the first faint light of day appears? What does the Bible tell us? Well, first let's look at the Hebrew word translated night. The word that is translated night is Layla, L-A-Y-L-A-H. Not the Eric Clapton song, but the Hebrew word, Layla, L-A-Y-L-A-H. Vines defines this word as the period of time that is dark, and the Bible clearly supports that definition. For instance, as you go to Genesis chapter 1:5, the word for night there, darkness he called Layla. The dark portion of the night he calls Layla. And to that is the part of the 24-hour period that is dark. While we're here, let's notice the rest of the verse. It's clear that darkness, night, evening, all pertain to the 24 hours between sunset and sunrise, to the dark portion of the 24-hour day. Let's go to Exodus 12, verse 22. Exodus 12, verse 22. And look at one of the words there. It says at the end of the verse, "And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning." So this is where God said, "None of you shall go out," and the word there is boker, B-O-Q-E-R. And Genesis chapter 1 clearly associates boker as the daylight portion of the day. So Layla represents the darkness, that period of time from sunset to the next sunrise, and boker refers to the daylight or the morning. Before we examine this further, let's go back and look at the usage of Layla or night in Exodus 12. Let's go to verses 29 through 30. Exodus 12, verses 29 through 30. This gives us some insight into this. It says, "And it shall come to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night." So this has to be after midnight when he rose, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians. "And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead." So it says that Pharaoh, who struck the firstborn, and so Pharaoh rose when? In the night. And the word there is Layla. He rose in the night, Layla. And then verse 31 says, "Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night." He called for them during that time called Layla. So how long after midnight this occurred, we don't know. But we do know this, it was after midnight when this occurred, and it was still being referred to as Layla or night. Remember, some people say you can call morning any time after midnight. But it's clearly referring to after midnight as what? Night. It refers to it as night. It's not being called boker or morning. A couple of additional passage usages of Layla or night can be found in Exodus as well. Let's go to Exodus 13, verse 21. Exodus 13, verse 21. It says, "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day and night." So how long would they need the pillar of fire by night? Would you only need it till midnight? So if you needed to make that midnight bathroom run and the pillar of fire was not there, it may have made it a little difficult. So they did have, God was there, and God was, that fire by night was there to give them the light that they needed. So they needed it until the time when the sun was beginning to come up. So as you think about this, it helps to confirm the usage of that Hebrew word Layla or night, and emphasizes that it refers to that period of darkness between sunset and sunrise. It's not referring to sunset, between sunset and midnight. Another verse here in Exodus that helps to make the same point is found in Exodus chapter 10, verse 13. Exodus chapter 10, verse 13. It says, "So Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. When it was morning, the east wind brought the locust." So it refers to night here, which is Layla. So Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. Night is boker, or is Layla. And when it was morning, that word is boker. So you have the night, and then you have the morning, when the locust came up. And this verse is significant for giving the biblical definition of both these words, because it helps us because it shows a complete period of time. The night, and then the day, which is how God's days run. So this verse clearly records that the wind blew all night before the morning came and the locust arrived. And it shows that morning Boker occurs after the darkness of night has ended. So nothing is there to indicate that morning could occur after midnight while it was still dark, as those who advocate the Passover on the 15th claim. So does the Bible clearly define the word boker for morning? Does it clearly tell us when morning begins? Let's look at another passage in the book of Judges, Judges 19. Judges chapter 19. Judges 19, verse 1. Judges 19, verse 1. It says, "And it came to pass in those days, when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim. He took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah." And this is the incident that occurs here when everybody was doing what was right in his own eyes. And this Levite came to Gibeah, and they ended up in the town square because no one would take them in. And an elderly man noticed that they were still out, and he saw knew how dangerous that was, so he invited them in to stay with him. And that brings us down to verse 22. It says, "As they were enjoying themselves, suddenly certain men of the city, perverted men, surrounded the house and beat on the door. And they spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, 'Bring out the man who came to your house, that we may know him.'" And the King James says, "carnally." And so they're going back and forth here, and ultimately they offer to give up the man's daughter and the concubine for their sexually perverse use. And so then we come to verse 25. It says, "But the men would not heed him, so the man took his concubine and brought her out to them, and they knew her and abused her all night until morning." All night until morning. "And when the day began to break, they let her go." Night's over, and the day begins to break. "Then the woman came as the day was dawning and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light." So it's dawn, but it's not completely light yet. So they abused her all night, Layla. They abused her until morning, Boker. And so when does morning begin? When the day began to break. The day begins when the day begins to break and it begins to be light. So we see here that that Boker clearly defines morning, beginning at the time when the day began to break. Just before sunrise, as the first light appears. That's what Boker refers to. Now, when did the children of Israel leave their homes on that Passover? It says they're not to leave until morning. Not until Boker. Not until the day began to break, as we saw in Judges 19, verse 25. It was shortly before sunrise, at the very earliest, that the Israelites left their houses that night. So they didn't come out during the night. They stayed in their houses as they had been commanded. And then when first light came, then they could leave their homes. So this leads to the next question. When did the Israelites spoil the Egyptians? When did the Israelites spoil the Egyptians? What happened on the daylight portion of the 14th, if it's not when the lambs were killed? Well, those who claim the Passover occurred on the 15th claim that the Egyptians had already been spoiled at some time prior to that, before the Passover and the death of the firstborn of Egypt. That's what the Jews claim and what the advocates of a 15th Passover claim. And they make this claim based on the translation in the New King James and the King James of verses 35 and 36. Let's go to Exodus 12 and look at verses 35 and 36. Exodus 12, verses 35 and 36. It says, "Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. So as you look at this, it seems to be in the past. It looks like it's something that's already taken place. And you could infer from it that they did this. They did the spoiling of the Egyptians before they killed the Passover lambs and before the 10th plague of the death angel. But is that how it really happened? Do other scriptures support that? Now, the Hebrew conveys a slightly different meaning, as some other translations indicate. A couple of those translations, for instance, the ASV version reads, "And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they asked of the Egyptians jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And Jehovah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so they let them have what they asked, and they despoiled the Egyptians." It doesn't really give you that past tense. It's another way of looking at translating the words. The New Century Version goes, "So the people took their dough before the yeast was added," beginning in verse 34. "They wrapped the bowls for making dough in clothing and carried them on their shoulders. The Israelites did what Moses told them to do and asked their Egyptian neighbors for things made of silver and gold for clothing." So it doesn't sound like it's past tense here. "The Lord caused the Egyptians to think well of them, and the Egyptians gave the people everything they asked for, so the Israelites took rich gifts from them." So there, it doesn't necessarily have to be translated in a past tense. So you can see there are other ways of translating it. But what do some other scriptures tell us? Do they give us any indication of whether they spoiled the Egyptians before the 10th plague or after the 10th plague? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 3, because it does give us an answer to this question. Exodus chapter 3, verse 19. Exodus chapter 3, verse 19. Here, this is before any of this ever unfolds, but God is giving them some indication of how it's going to go. He says in verse 19, "But I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, not even by a mighty hand." So he's not going to let you go. He's not going to let you go. You're going to go ask him, and he's going to say no. He says, then he goes on to say, "So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my wonders. I will strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst, and after that he will let you go." So did he let them go before the 10th plague? How many wonders were done in Egypt? There were 10. And this verse tells us he's not going to let you go till all 10 of them have transpired. So it says, "And I will give," so he says, "You're not going to be able to go. I will do this, do in the midst, and after that they will let you go when all the wonders have been done, all 10 of them." And once all 10 of those wonders have been done, what does it say? In verse 21, it says, "I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall be when you go that you shall not go out empty-handed. But every woman shall ask of her neighbor, namely of her who dwells near her house, articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. You shall put them on your sons and on your daughters, so you shall plunder the Egyptians." So they had to plunder the Egyptians after the 10 plagues were over, the 10 wonders were done. And they were not to go out of their houses until morning. So they had to do this during the daylight portion of the 14th. That's when they plundered the Egyptians. So they went out and they asked the Egyptians for these things after all 10 wonders had done. The 10th plague was completed before they began that process. So when and where did the Exodus begin? We've alluded to this a little bit, but let's go to Exodus chapter 12. Verse 36. When and where did the Exodus begin? Verse 36. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. So you have this mass of people, 600,000 people. A mixed multitude went up with them also in flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. So you have 600,000 men plus a mixed multitude accompanying them. You have the family of all these men, and you have all their herds and their flocks. And they're all converging on one place. It tells us that the Exodus began at Ramses. Ramses is where they assembled. And when you add women, children, and all the mixed multitude to about 600,000 men, you come up with about 2 million people, along with a bunch of goats and cattle and sheep. That's a lot of people and a lot of animals. And, you know, as you think about this, are they just going to just go out and everything's going to be disorganized and everybody, okay, we're heading over there and we'll see you. And everybody just takes out and it would just be chaos, just complete chaos. So we learn something about what took place here in the book of Numbers, chapter 33. Let's go to Numbers, chapter 33. You know, it's interesting, as you look at Josephus, it tells us that Moses served in the Egyptian army. So probably because Moses had gone through that experience of organizing military troops and baggage and all of that kind of thing, he had some understanding of how to organize a large body of people and to be able to direct them from point A to point B. Because that is a substantial undertaking with that many people, especially. Numbers chapter 33, verse 1, it says, "These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron." So they were organized into tribal units in order that they could, in an organized way, move forward. And they had a way of doing it. One tribe went first, one tribe went second, and so on and so forth. And it was done in an organized way. Verse 2, "Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are their journeys according to their starting points." So where was their starting point for the Exodus? We learned that in verse 3. "They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians." So they departed from Ramses, not from their homes in Goshen. They started from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month, at sunset on the 15th. The first day of unleavened bread. The first day of the first month on the 15th day is the first day of unleavened bread. And they left on the day after the Passover. So what were the Egyptians still doing at this time? Verse 4 of Numbers 33. It says, "For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn whom the Lord had killed among them. Also on their gods the Lord had executed judgment." So the people of Egypt were occupied with burying their dead. They had a devastating blow. And their focus wasn't on Israel leaving. Their focus was on their own problems. So Israel begins their journey. So did they begin departing from Ramses at night after sunset at the very beginning of the 15th? Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1. Deuteronomy 16, verse 1. It says, "Observe the month Abib, or Nisan, and keep the Passover to the Lord your God, which you would keep on the 14th. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night." In the month of Abib, you were brought out of Egypt by night. And we know that that was on the first day of unleavened bread. Because the first day of unleavened bread memorializes what? coming out of Egypt. Passover does not commemorate that. It says, "For on this same day, the first day of unleavened bread, you are going to be leaving the land of Egypt," in Exodus chapter 12. So, to put it simply, the day, first day of unleavened bread memorializes their leaving Egypt. We begin the days of unleavened bread with what ceremony? We begin with meeting together for the night to be observed. And we do that because we commemorate that time when Israel began coming out of Egypt. It was a very special time for us, and it has a very symbolic meaning for all of us, a significant symbolic meaning. So how much time would be required for the Israelites to leave their homes and journey to Ramses? As I said, it could be from a mile to 15 miles to get there. And those people that were going 15 miles, it was going to take you a few hours to get over there. And they were told to leave their homes at Boker, or morning, as the day dawned. And as soon as they saw it was beginning to get light, they all would have known it was time to spoil the Egyptians and then head for Ramses. And they all would have been given these instructions ahead of time. And how long would it have taken for them to travel? Well, some people, 20 minutes, half hour, and others had to travel a much longer way and had maybe 6 to 8 hours to finally get over there and rendezvous with everybody else and get ready to leave. When you put all of this together, you see it couldn't all happen in one night. Couldn't all happen in one night. It would take two nights. Actually, two nights and a day to get it all done. So we see an overview of Israel's first Passover. They kill the lamb at the beginning of the 14th between sunset and darkness. The lambs were killed at their homes or their neighbor's home. And it would take 5 to 6 hours to slaughter and prepare the lambs for eating. And as they began to eat, around midnight is when the death angel passed through the land. So they slaughtered the lambs and did all of that and cooked it. And it was about midnight when they would begin eating. They ate in haste with fear and trepidation, knowing that the death angel was passing over and that the firstborn of the Egyptians were dying. They then burned the remains, which would have taken another 2 to 3 hours. And then they remained in their house until Boker, that is until morning, the crack of dawn, at which time they knew they could venture forth from their homes. After leaving their homes on the daylight portion of the Passover day, they spoiled the Egyptians. They then left for the assembling of the nation at Ramses. So they all gathered there, they formed up and got organized, and they left. They journeyed, their starting point was Ramses. They then began departing from Ramses as the daylight waned, as the day came to a close on the 14th and the 15th began. They came out of Egypt at night at the beginning of the 15th. They began their journey out of Egypt on the first day of unleavened bread, which memorializes the Exodus out of Egypt. So with that, hopefully you have a better understanding of Israel's first Passover and how it all fits together from the sacrifice of the lambs at the beginning of the 14th to the point where Israel came out of Egypt at the beginning of the 15th. Hopefully this will be clearer to you than it was before, and you can see the reasons why we believe what we believe. So, before we quit, any questions? Good, because I may have not known the answer. So anyway, I thought I would offer that. But hopefully that gives you a better understanding of things, and you can see it all fits together beautifully. And as we go through this, it's not only that you can see it from an Old Testament perspective, but it's quite interesting how it all fits together with the New Testament. And it all follows the same general pattern, and is a very beautiful thing to see how God works things out.